Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Coming up in this edition of the TV Black Box, the ratings race takes a turn and some heavy hitters make some very big statements. Is Channel 10's The Project facing the axe? And Alison Langdon reveals how Karl Stefanovic has changed from his days with Lisa Wilkinson. Welcome to the podcast where people in the TV industry get their news. TV Black Box is about to start.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is TV Black Box, bringing you the inside goss from the TV industry.
Hello there, I'm Rob McKnight, and as usual, we are here to discuss the TV topics of the week. And I can't do that without these people. Aaron Ryan is over in Perth. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, gorgeous people. And if only the people would hear the unedited version of this podcast.
Oh, indeed. Sarah Monahan has had 4 hours sleep, so she's going to make even less sense than usual. Hello, Sarah, in Florida.
Hey, at least I've got my clothes on.
Well, yes, that's true. Last time you were in party mode. Well, we won't talk about that. David Robinson joins us from the Gold Coast. Hello, David.
Hello there, Robert. Great to be with you all.
And Malk is missing in action this week, but he will be back next week, I'm led to believe. All right, let's get into the big topics of the week, because we often talk here at TV Black Box about the PR Jedis when it comes to ratings and how every network claims their wins. And Zoe Samonos at the Sydney Morning Herald has penned an article on just that. Writing about the ratings and what it all means, she delved into total people versus demos, the exclusion of one-off events like the Olympics and the close race between 7 and 9. Zoe also spoke to 7 West Media CEO James Warburton, who had some, let's say, harsh words for Channel 10, claiming they are stuffed and essentially are only a streaming company now. Aaron, there was a lot to unpack in this article. What did you make of it all?
Oh, where to start? I'm a big, big fan of Zoe's, but I'm going to have to call this one out and say that I think that the independence of the Sydney Morning Herald and the Nine Entertainment Company might come into a little bit of question with this. I think Zoe's piece was written with a Nine slant, with predominantly Nine perspective, using Nine statistics.
I've got to tell you, everything I've always heard about the SMH and The Age has been about their fierce independence. I think you're barking up the wrong tree there. I think she laid it all out about how there are different ways of skewing the numbers. She gave 7's figures on all people and the 40 weeks versus the calendar year. I think she was very open in how she was reporting everything. She reported the different skewing methods. I'm not really sure how you're drawing a conclusion that it was skewed.
Well, I could give you a couple of examples, Rob. The first one is that she says that the 3 most commonly used by advertisers are the 16 to 39, the grocery shopper and child, and the 25 to 54 segments in the 5 metropolitan capital cities. Yeah. Now, Oztam, when we get our reports each day, release 16 to 39, 18 to 49, and 25 to 54. The only network that ever uses grocery shopper buyers and a child is Channel 9. So that article will help put that message out there that they're winning that demographic, but it's simply not used in any major Oztam figure. That information...
Yeah, but neither are under 50s yet. We're reporting on that. And the simple fact is that when they're talking to advertisers, I'm assuming, and I don't know this for a fact, that the grocery buyer thing is a thing for advertisers. And I'm definitely not trying to be a Nine fanboy because I always call out bullshit. I just don't think this article had it. Yeah, it had... there were obviously some categories like grocery buyers used that are used by Nine, and Zoe is part of the Nine network, the Nine Entertainment Company. I just don't see a problem here, mate. And
there's a couple of other things too. Obviously, as you know, that the Olympic 2-week period when it's excluded is for that two-week period. Now, Channel 9 a while ago did try to put out a release trying to make, you know, the 16, 17, 18 days, but they backtracked on that. But
mate, as soon as we pointed out to them, they took it back and redid the figures and said it was an honest mistake.
But, Rob, it's back. This information that Zoe has put out for the calendar year, excluding the Olympics, is for the entire Olympic period, not just the 14 days.
Okay, well then I agree with you on that then. If that's the case...
That information has clearly been provided by Nine for that purpose.
How do you know that she has excluded the Olympics period?
Because there
is... Like the whole 18 days and not just the traditional 2 weeks.
Because there is an Oztam run that can be put out by the networks to show, you know, which excludes, you know, whatever days that you want to. And the figures that I've had, I haven't got them in front of me, but I have got them, actually show that it's more than the 14-day period that's been...
Right.
It definitely is that. The other thing is about the including the Olympic Games is survey year versus calendar year. Now, in this article, at the very top, she's written, you know, for purposes of this article, I'm going to use calendar year, which is absolutely fine. You can use the calendar year, no problem. But the agreement between the networks about excluding the Olympics is for the survey period. So you exclude the 2 weeks of the Olympics and you exclude the survey. However, the calendar year puts everything back into it. So once again, that will skew Nine when you're going to have the calendar year and exclude the Olympics. That's not what the calendar year does. The calendar year is for 365 days of the year.
Okay, Judge Rob is ready to pass his verdict. On the case, if they are using more than 14 days of the Olympics, I judge in favour of Aaron Ryan and the Seven Network. In the terms of the calendar year, I find in favour of Nine because I don't see a problem with excluding the Olympics because that is the big event everyone talks about. That is my judgment. No correspondence will be entered into. You get one win there, Aaron. You get one win, be happy.
Can I talk about something about Olympic ratings, which I've never been comfortable with, and I think it's ridiculous, and that is the fact that they are excluded from ratings. Now, this is my point. The Seven Network or the Nine Network, or the Ten Network, they've all had the Olympics over their vast years. I have no idea and do not understand the fact that the bottom line of a network has paid for the rights to the Olympics. They should be included. Nine or Ten, if you want the Olympics, then pay the extra $100 million for them.
I think that's a fair point,
I just think it's outrageous that in this day and age that we go, oh, no, the Olympics are special and it's not very fair. It's fair if you want to pay for the extra money and host it yourself. It's not like it was a hat where 7, 9 and 10 were in a hat and someone drew it out and it was luck and they didn't pay for anything, they didn't do anything for it, then fine, we would exclude it. But the fact is that the networks who buy Olympics or Commonwealth Games are doing that because they have put the money out, they've paid the hundreds of millions of dollars, and the idea then that the other two networks can say, oh, well, no, we can't really, we can't have that in our comparisons, is absolutely rubbish.
But here's something, Judge Rob is ready to rule again.
Oh, wow. He's got the gavel.
Wow, I've got the gavel out. So here's the thing, Robbo, you are 100% correct. However, I'm ruling against you because the networks have always had a gentleman's agreement that the 2 weeks of the Olympics would be not included in the final reports because it's not something they have every year. So I think it's in that article. Steve-O says you can't compare the Olympics to last year because they didn't have the Olympics last year and they won't have them next year. And now I have a big sympathy. I've always thought, well, you spend hundreds of millions of dollars on these things. You deserve to cash in. You do from a revenue point of view. But I'm sorry, Olympics, only the two-week period. All other hangovers is fair to be counted. So I do rule in favour of the networks challenging the inclusion of Olympic figures. All right. Look, let me say this, moving on, because we can get bogged down with that. I'm sort of glad Malk isn't here, otherwise this would just end for 20 minutes. But one line in the whole thing got me. It was Channel 10's Beverly McGarvey when she said, "We're happy with the performance we've had. Lots of really great results," when she was talking about what they've done this year. And I went, I must have missed them. And I was going back and looking over, Survivor, yep. Where are all the other great results, Bev? Can't see them. I'm calling BS on that one, and sorry, Judge Rob is ruling again.
Jesus Christ.
All right, moving on. And details continue to emerge following the tragic death of a cinematographer on the set of Alec Baldwin's film Rust. Baldwin fired a prop gun, killing Helena Hutchins and injuring another director. As the investigation continues, we are learning of complaints and strikes over working conditions on the set and a crew member having been previously fired from a job for a similar prop gun incident. Look, Sarah, over the coming days and weeks, we're going to learn a lot more as someone ultimately is handed down blame for this. But what do we think here? Do you finish making the film? Is it disrespectful to the memory of this cinematographer to not complete the film, or is it disrespectful to keep going?
Well, I mean, they finished The Crow.
That's right.
After they killed Brandon Lee the same way. But I don't think they should. There's already been so many problems on this set. They've had people walk out previously, and then this happened. I think that they should just retire it. The director of cinematography is such a big part of a movie.
Mm.
And then, you know, other people were injured as well. And it's just, at this point, they should just shut it down. I get that people have jobs and all of that, but apparently nobody wanted that job anyway because they're out in the middle of the desert in New Mexico and they're not happy because they've already walked off set. So I would say just let it go.
You know, it's interesting. This prop gun, by all accounts, was used with real bullets for, they were shooting cans or something like that while they were just mucking around, Robbo. And it's quite, I seriously, it sounds like a Murder, She Wrote plot, you know, where someone's put real bullets in the fake gun and you know, someone's been shot.
Well, a prop gun is just a real gun with blanks. It's
correct.
Like they keep calling it a prop gun.
Yeah.
And people think it must be like a plastic toy gun, and it's not. It's just a regular weapon with blanks. And blanks can still kill people, like, because there's still air that comes out. And if you put a blank up to someone's head, you're still going to shoot their head off because there's still enough pressure that it's like pushing an air gun, like in No Country for Old Men, where he uses the air tool to put the hole in people's head. It's essentially the same thing. So the whole point of using a prop gun, like, they should just use plastic guns or whatever, not a real gun. And they can do all this stuff in post now. They can do it editing,
It's fine for everyone to say that, but that traditionally hasn't been the way it's been done. You know, and we on the Sophie Formica show, she spoke to someone from the Australian film industry and she asked the question, why didn't they just use prop gun, you know, like you're saying, plastic guns? And his point was, well, that can't give you the same effect as a real gun. So when you do the shot where you're firing a real gun,
it is still acting.
No,
just
no,
make it
not
look
from
real.
The actor's point of view, what the gun does and the way it fires, and nothing's as ever realistic. But going to the point you're talking about, maybe now films will do it as CGI. But you've got we're coming off what 80 years of film history where this is the way it's always been done.
But the amount of bitching that Hollywood does, Hollywood is so anti-gun. In like they're always like people shouldn't have guns. They're so against the Second Amendment. Like there's all of this. Every time you hear like anti-gun rhetoric in the U.S., it comes out of Hollywood. And yet every one of their fucking movies has a gun in it. You know, and they constantly have accidents on set.
This was a person's job, though. So we know that there is an industry standard of saying cold gun. Cold gun was yelled out, which meant that someone had checked that gun. That's not Alec Baldwin's job. So a lot of people are coming out and saying, well, as a producer, an executive producer, you also have a lot of powers, as apart from just being an actor who comes out of the trailer and turns up on set. But there was a person in charge of that. It's not like, say, a TV show in Australia where maybe a stagehand will do something or a floor manager will do something or a producer will do something to prepare for a segment. This is that one person's job to get that particular prop, whether it's a gun, whether it's a glass, whether it's a mobile phone. It's their job to prepare that. But there are obviously higher stakes in preparing a prop gun. This person apparently had checked the gun, had yelled that it was a cold gun, that it was ready to fire, and that's what happened. Getting back to your original question, Rob, I think that there should be correspondence with the director of photography's family and everyone else that's part of it, whether it should continue. I'm not immediately against whether the movie continues or not, just because she unfortunately did lose her life. I'd like to think that if there was sensitive and engaging correspondence with her family, what would they like to do? I think that they have the final say as to whether it should continue, because you never want to get those people saying, oh, you're just continuing for money or to recoup money or anything like that. If her family says, look, no, she talked about this film a lot, she loved this film, she was really passionate about it, we think that she'd like it to continue, then I think absolutely. Should they then change what the guns they use on set there, like Sarah was saying? Yeah, I think that'd probably be a good way.
All right, The Project was once a ratings winner for Channel 10, but has faced a steady decline over the years, pulling in just 267,000 viewers last Monday night. And now, parent company CBS is concerned about the power the show wields at the network while not delivering ratings. You know, Aaron, it was interesting when the Daily Mail contacted me. They were doing up this story. They asked me for a few comments. And I've got to say, I think there are a few factors that are contributing to the downfall of The Project. I've put those out in the public domain. What do you think is going on with the show?
Look, I don't think the show should be axed, but something needs to be done to completely wipe the show and start something completely new in that time slot, whether it's a game show or whether they're going to put Neighbours there or something like that. It's not going to attract anything more than what The Project would do. The Project is a good show. I don't know what's quite wrong with it at the moment. You know, obviously open for discussion now.
You go woke, you go broke.
But here's my idea for 10, and it will take like literally 20 seconds. They're not going to beat 7 News and 9 News with a 10 bulletin, but they could have a go at the 5:30 slot with the game shows. So put in something big at 5:30. I don't know. Something.
So what happens to 10 News first? Half an hour show?
No. So you go with something big prizes, huge, older skewing like Sale of the Century at 5:30, leading to 10 News at 6 o'clock. Now, obviously, it's not going to beat 7 and 9 News, but it'll have a much bigger base at 6 o'clock from a better game show, and then put The Project on at 7 o'clock for 30 minutes for a much more streamlined show.
I'm sorry, I have to completely disagree. I don't think 10 putting News on at 6 o'clock is going to work. And traditionally, what you find, and all research shows this, is that a lot of the people who watch 10 News at 5, at 6 o'clock, want more news. And so they'll go to 7 or 9 to actually see what they're offering in terms of a news service. The simple fact is, The Project used to rate much better. It was an enjoyable show. It takes itself too seriously now. And I really need to say, the presenters, I really love them all. I think Waleed, Carrie and Pete Hellier are fantastic. I think they're great. But the show is so far up itself, it can't see daylight.
Because of the presenters that are on there. The reason that show is so uptight is because it's badly produced. The people who are on there think that they are, every day when they sit at their desk, are curing cancer, and they are not. I think that there are a lot of...
Well, then that comes down to producing. If those people are believing that, they need to be slapped down a bit.
The Project thinks it is the best thing on television, and I think no one is willing or able to look in a mirror there and go, hang on, guys, this is not the way a show should work. It should work a bit better than this. We should be having more fun. We should not be taking ourselves so seriously, because that's what it was in the beginning.
So as someone who doesn't actually get to watch The Project live because, you know, geo-blocking, but all I see about The Project is social media, and there's always clips, and then there's always the comments. And even the Daily Mail article today had 53 comments on it, and every single one of them agreed that the Project should be taken off air.
When you said there were 53 comments, I went, oh, God, they're all having a go at me. And you were like, no one said a damn thing about you.
That's the worst thing, though, isn't it?
Yeah. No. Why not? Why not?
Yeah, The Project could be a brilliant show. It could be a brilliant show that gets the news of the day, its original brief, looks at it a bit differently, has a bit of fun with it, but it just doesn't do that anymore. And there seems to be no one within the network, no one within Roving. And clearly, if ViacomCBS are only worrying about it now. Are they even watching Channel 10? It's been a problem for a long time. Everyone just needs to sit down and go, guys, we're not doing what we said we would be doing, and the ratings are reflecting it. We could be a great show. We could be an amazing point of difference. We could have fun. We could do serious. We could do all of these things. But we're so hung up on having those beautiful, glossy image that we're losing everything that we're about and everything that we used to be about, and it just seems to be all about money.
Do you think it's possible that the show wants to be light and what everyone wants, but in the last 12 to 18 months it's very insensitive to do that?
I don't think this is 12 to 18 months issue, mate. I mean, it's been going a lot longer.
Just in terms of COVID, when America pulled out of Afghanistan and what happened over there, issues that we've had with China, it's just very... very hard to make a really light-hearted show these days.
There's always shit going on in the world. There's always.
I don't know if they feel that it's insensitive to get on there and make jokes all the time when a majority of the news is so
they're
grim.
Still making
I'm
jokes.
Just putting it out there. Maybe not.
No, Hellier makes great jokes. The problem with the project is its tagline should be, "We report and we decide."
That's not bad. And
could we get a little, Abby, could you add a little bit of chuckle in after? No one, it was like crickets.
All I heard is that Rob wanted crickets.
Yes,
crickets
that's true.
After his comment, Abby.
Okay, let's take a look at some key ratings headlines from this week so far. On Sunday, The Block continued to wow with over 1 million viewers for the Blues, while the Big Seven spotlight story promoted by the Red Team failed to fire. The Sunday Project continues to disappoint, providing no lead into Celebrity MasterChef, which is off the boil on 573,000. To Monday, and SAS Australia Hell Week needs to hand in its armband. That show is done. The Block is holding strong, but Love Island drops from a lead-in of 944,000 to 285,000. Now, look, we're not being as hard as we normally would be on those figures because of the later time slot and the fact it's a digital play for the Blues, but I don't think even those caveats excuse those numbers. Even with a different lineup of presenters, the project on Monday shows it's simply not connecting with audiences, beaten by ACA and Home and Away. To Tuesday now, and Mog's headline on TV Black Box proclaimed, if it weren't for the project's poor numbers, 10 would have beaten 7 in primetime. And he's right. Hell Week is a disaster for the Reds, while the Block rides high for the Blues, and I might have to admit, I was wrong about 10's The Doghouse. It brought in a very solid 507,000 viewers. Now, against all odds, this one is building a solid audience and performing well on plus 7 numbers. Could I possibly owe the executives at 10 an apology?
No.
Nah, you've put me through too much shit. Oh, well. Aaron, talk to me about the plus 7 numbers for The Doghouse Australia, because it actually was quite good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it did go over 800, I think 830,000 maybe once. So, I mean, it was a pretty good figure for that time slot. One thing I must say about the ratings, I just can't stand the Australian public sometimes. The networks now, when they make these franchises, are just going to make celebrity additions. So MasterChef didn't work with the normal contestants. SAS, which I absolutely love the show, but without the celebrities and putting ordinary Australians in, rated like a dog. Not The Doghouse, which rated better. But it's just sad, though. Are we just going to get celebrities for every single franchise now and never have ordinary Australians?
Yes, there's a lot of unemployed actors and entertainers in Australia and B-grade and D-grade celebrities who desperately need to pay the rent because they can't go and get regular jobs because they're
Sarah
just...
And Sarah is double-vaxxed, by the way.
I forgot about you, Sarah,
famous,
sorry.
They're just famous enough that they, you know, they can't get a regular job. But, you know, they're also not really famous enough that they can get a good job on television. So there's this happy medium called celebrity reality, where everybody goes to die.
Wow. Hey, look, it's also worth noting, after some very strong results, the Today Show wobbled on Tuesday morning, falling under 200K and was beaten by Sunrise and News Breakfast Robbo. Should we read too much into that, or is that the fluctuating breakfast market?
I think that's a fluctuating breakfast market, and I think that's just the reality of where those players compete now in the marketplace. I think we're at risk sometimes when it comes to ratings about getting all excited about numbers that we're used to you know, 5 or 6 years ago. Those numbers don't exist anymore. This is the reality. And I think almost every day, maybe every week, every month, as we progress into the future, we need to recalibrate and rethink our ideas of what is a hit in this very fractured market and who was successful. Yes, today wobbled a little bit. It's great for ABC News Breakfast, Sunrise as well. But I just think it's one of those things. People shouldn't sell their shares in the Today Show just yet.
Can I ask a question to Rob, because you're the breakfast man, breakfast TV. I don't understand how the ratings keep changing. I mean, I thought people ordinarily just switch on and go, I'm going to watch Sunrise or I'm going to watch Today. Some days it's all over the place. I mean, Today gets within a whisker of Sunrise and it's like 1,000 viewers. And then the next day it's like 60,000 viewers different. And then it seemed to be a pattern that on Wednesdays, Today would actually win. And then on, you know, this Wednesday, they actually lost to even News Breakfast. How does... Is the audience literally just switching each day? I mean, because I thought people watched
I think one that's show. A sign of a changing market. So what that shows, when you're the challenger, you will sometimes get some highs and then you'll get kicked in the guts again and you'll be low. And that's what we're seeing with the Today Show. And while Sunrise can celebrate Today falling to third place on Tuesday, maybe Sunrise had something good. So you've got to imagine Sunrise have got a strong base audience, right? But they're wavering. So they're starting to go over to the Today Show. But their default is still 7. So they might even flick on 7 and go, oh, yeah, and flick over. Maybe on Tuesday morning, and I genuinely don't know what Sunrise's lineup was, but maybe they had a strong show. Maybe they had an interview that was compelling in that 7 o'clock hour or something good that they were doing a pull through for. So, and we've also got to understand that on that day, the numbers seem to be lower as well. So Sunrise, I think, only did 244,000, where they're usually above 260. So when you're challenging and when you're starting to get the ratings, and I can correlate this to when we were Studio 10, we would get, one day we were building, we might get some great number. There was even a time where we beat the morning show and Today Extra in the 9:30 hour, and then the following day we'd have a big slide back down, and then you'd build again, and it is that thing that you will get fluctuation, but you're making chinks in the armor. So I think what you've got to look at for this over long term is the trend, and 9 and 7 will certainly be looking at that trend and seeing who's heading in the right direction. At the moment, let's not forget, Sunrise have a lot to crow about. They're still number one. Yeah, they lost a day, but, you know, at the end of this year, they will more than likely be able to say, we've won every week this year. Now, they used to be able to say, we won every day, but it's still a pretty impressive stat to be able to say, we won every week. The thing is, will that sustain going into 2022? We're with Carl and Ali on fire together. Nat and Koshy, strong team. But is Sunrise feeling stale? Is there something about the chemistry with Carl and Ali that's connecting with viewers? Or is it something else entirely? Does that answer your question?
I'm not sure he asked you one.
I guess it does. I think with the evening news bulletins, people pick, you know, for example, Peter Overton or Mark Ferguson, and the ratings go up or down just a little tiny bit. But in the morning, people seem to get their remotes out, don't they?
That's not quite true, Aaron, because even when we were rebuilding Nine News, especially in Sydney, same thing happened. You would get some good figures, then you would drop again because their viewers were rusted on 7. But they were starting to make the switch. And so when 7 is their default at that time, they'll come across once, forget, oh, then come across again until their habit starts breaking. It's the exact same pattern when shows start to take off, no matter what network, no matter what time slot. All right, the first round of votes have been cast and the final nominations are in for the TV Black Box Awards. Live streaming on November 28, a total of 22 awards will be given out to recognise the Australian television industry in the wake of the Logies being postponed for another year. It was 7 who received the most overall nominations with 32. The ABC came in next with 26 nominations, although led the noms when based only on programs and not people. Nine were close behind with 21 nominations and 10 in fourth with 12. Streaming services Amazon Prime Video, Stan, Binge, Paramount Plus and Apple TV also picked up some nominations. Robbo, who are you hoping to see take out some boxies?
Well, I obviously think Nicole Kidman's a big fan of this podcast and of the website in general. I know that she is one of the nominees. I have no doubt that we'll see Nick there. Great to see you there, Nick, and love to the other person that you're married to. What's his name? Kyle? Kevin? I can't remember. She's the star in that relationship. I think this is really exciting, and it gives that alternative because we don't have the Logies. And the Logies are very special. I'm hoping that the ABC gets the recognition that it deserves.
Look, it's going to be an interesting race. The votes are coming through thick and fast. And every time I look at it, you know, it's changing. There are some very tight races and some categories are changing along the way. So, Aaron, is there anyone you'd like to see recognised?
Well, I'd like to see Lisa Wilkinson and Karl Stefanovic both win and bring them together on the 28th. That'd be.
I'd like to see that acceptance
maybe
speech.
Maybe I could make that happen.
Brilliant.
That'd be lovely. Yeah.
Maybe she could give him a copy of her book. Yeah.
All right, now it's time for Hatches and Dispatches with Sarah.
Thanks, Rob. Seven West Media have announced the appointment of Alex Tansley in a newly created position as Head of Convergence Audience Trading. Effective immediately, he will be responsible for developing and delivering Seven's strategy across dynamic and converged audience trading solutions through Code 7 Plus, CRM, and developing new operating models and products. Peter Noble is joining National Indigenous Television, or NITV, as a general manager overseeing commission, internal productions, acquisitions, sports, and news programming. He brings more than 20 years' experience in the media industry, most recently with the Walt Disney Company, playing an integral role in the launch of Disney Plus in Australia and New Zealand. Tara Colton at Seven has been promoted within the Seven Sport team to executive producer of digital and sport. Her management of the digital and social strategies and operations for Seven Sport will include the Olympic Winter Games in Beijing next year. And that is this week's Hatches and Dispatches.
Thank you, Sarah. Coming up, Alison Langdon reveals how Karl Stefanovic has changed from his days with Lisa Wilkinson. And we open the TV Binge Box to find out what everyone's been watching this week. You're listening to TV Black Box.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, Alison Langdon has become a bit of a star at Nine, rising through the ranks as a reporter on Nine News through to 60 Minutes and now co-host of The Today Show. But she's now also branching out into primetime as host of Parental Guidance on Channel 9. I caught up with Alison Langdon a little earlier. Alison Langdon, welcome to TV Black Box.
Nice to talk to you. How are you, Rob?
I'm very well. It's been a while since we last spoke, but obviously I see you on the Today Show every morning. You're kicking goals there.
Yeah, look, you know, we're having fun. I think it's been a long year for everyone, hasn't it, this year? And I think most of us will be happy to farewell 2021 and say hello 2022 and never, ever, ever talk about COVID again, right?
Hey, how are you finding the Today Show? Because the show has been through a bit of turmoil. You've joined the show. You've got great chemistry with Karl. I think the pairing is fantastic. You guys have really found a way to deliver the news and deliver fun, and the ratings are coming.
I think what's been really important to us is we realise there's so much big news to cover, and there has been since the day we started together. That was when we came back early because of the bushfires. Mm. But I'm also mindful that, you know, there's only so much you can take of bad news and doom and gloom. So for us, it's still hitting all those important big stories each morning. But in between, just trying to find those light moments, and often that involves, you know, us all razzing Karl a bit. But it's just, you know, it's a nice atmosphere on set. It's a lovely, warm environment. And so it's just finding that fun and realising what's going on in everyone's household in the mornings when you're getting ready. It's so important. In fact, I think it's more important now than it ever has been to have a bloody laugh.
So true.
And some days, you know, to be honest, it can be really hard to find that when, you know, especially if we go back a couple of months and when case numbers were going up, states were in lockdown, you know, state premiers and chief ministers were feuding. It was really angsty. And I think when all of that was going on, it was more important to go, okay, right, let's just, you know, let's find something that we can laugh about or makes us feel good, you know. There's still lots of other stories going on. Let's sort of try and find those and bring the stories or put the stories to air of, you know, good people doing good, fun things.
Now, obviously, taking over the Today Show co-hosting role is a huge, huge deal. It's one of the most prized spots on Australian television, but also one of the most fraught, because if you don't have that chemistry, it can implode, and we've seen that previously. Do you feel the pressure of taking on that role?
I think we all feel the pressure of taking on this role. You don't take it on lightly, this job. It's a big role. There's lots of scrutiny, and that's fair enough. But I think, you know, coming from 10 years and 60 minutes, so it was a great grounding. And on top of that, I did Weekend Today Show for several years. So I was used to morning television. It's different when you shift from weekends to weekdays. There is more scrutiny with that. You're on air longer, and there's a lot, you know, there's been a lot, as we've talked about, a lot of big issues that we've had to deal with. So you definitely don't take that lightly, and you're really mindful of, you know, what is it that the audience needs to hear and what is it that the audience wants to hear, and then just getting that mix right each day and just focusing on good content, good, you know, good chemistry between us. And as you say, that's... you know, that's either there or it's not. And I think for us, it's also grown over time as you learn to trust the person beside you and you read their cues. And, you know, the more you get to know the person sitting beside you, the more comfortable. And, you know, it's pretty sad, really, when you can finish each other's sentences.
Especially when it's Carl Stefanovic.
Maybe that just means we're predictable. I don't know.
It must be fascinating for you at the moment seeing all these extracts from the Lisa Wilkinson book, because you're sitting in that same chair. You are almost living the life she was leading, differently but same. And so to see her perception of things and the way you're sitting in that chair, there's no doubt to me Carl is sort of a different person than what he was back there.
Well, I mean, that's very hard for me to comment on because it was before my time. I can only talk about how it is now sitting next to Carl. And I mean, he is the most giving co-host, incredibly generous. And, you know, there are moments, as I'm sure you get in the 3.5 hours, where you might say something and it comes out and it's clunky or it's not quite right. He's great to see, having him there in the chair beside me, because you'll either kind of rescue the situation or you'll put me right in it. It's like, you know, you have to let that one go through to the keeper. It's like, nah, mate, that one's too good. So, you know, it's kind of fun. You know, if you don't get something quite right, he's either going to rescue it or he's going to dump you in it, which just makes great TV. So, you know, my experience, obviously, is all I can talk to. What happened with Lisa was before my time, so I don't really think it's appropriate for me to get involved or to comment.
Oh, look, very diplomatic answer, Ali. You are a true pro. what I will say, and this is a piece of commentary from me, is that you are bringing out the best in Carl and he is bringing out the best in you. And you two have become one of the best duos on Australian TV. And I don't think that can be underestimated. We've seen what happens when the casting is wrong, and you are doing such an amazing job every morning sitting alongside Carl, and I think you ought to be applauded for that.
Oh, I mean, that's very, very kind of you, Rob, to say that. And I think...
No, you know I don't say it unless I mean it, Ali.
I know, which is why I truly mean it. Thank you. That is a really, really kind thing to say. And, you know, but we came into this, and I sort of feel like my job is to make Carl look good, and his is to make me look good. And if you're focused on what the other one is doing and trying to, you know, build them up, and by building them up, you still slap them down. That's part of the fun you've got with that relationship. then, you know, I don't think you can sort of really go wrong when you've got each other's back.
Now, one of the great joys of being on the Today Show is being noticed by the programming people and getting opportunities. And one of the opportunities you've got is Parental Guidance, which starts on Monday at 7:30. I've got to say, I've watched this show, and it's a very different show to the kind of reality fare that's out there. And it's so engaging from...
it's an entirely new concept and format. Sorry, I thought you'd finished. Continue.
No, that's okay. I could, you know me, I will go on forever. But the thing...
But that's what I love about you.
The thing about this show, I agree with you, it is different, it is a different format, and there are such compelling moments in it. And for any parent, when you look back at what you've done and how you've brought up kids, this is must-see TV.
Well, I think as parents, we've all got those moments we're really proud of, and we all have those moments we'd rather forget, right?
Yeah.
And when you're talking about some big issues in this show, such as, do you smack your child?
Mm.
Would your child go off with a stranger? You know, how do you deal with discipline? These are all issues. Screen time, that's another big one. These are all issues every single family is dealing with. And to see how all these different sets of parents deal with those is fascinating. Like, I've found, my husband and I have had so many chats about how we parent our kids since this show, since filming it. And what I realised is... we've never really given it a whole lot of thought as to how we're going to parent.
Yeah.
You know, we just kind of wing it. And, you know, I guess my husband's probably a little bit more disciplined than I am. I've worked out I'm probably a little too inconsistent. And so we've just had these great chats. We've sat down about, okay, how do we ensure we're on the same page here? And, you know, I've learnt just as much from the strict parents as I have from the free range parents in this experiment.
Mm.
So it's pretty fascinating, but it does make there are some pretty heated moments. There are some uncomfortable moments because we don't shy away from any of the topics that are being discussed in households around the country.
Well, look, you talk about the smacking one, and it was interesting because there is a couple who use smacking as one of their tools for disciplining their kids. And it's interesting, there were a couple of key points that came out of that. When the tables were turned and that the kids, it was opposite day, and the kids became the parents and the parents became the kids. And to see what kids pick up from parenting styles, I've got to tell you, I'm afraid to do that one. I think I should do it, but I'm afraid what would come out if we turn the tables like that. But what was also interesting was how everybody hounded the people who openly said, yes, we do smack our kids. And then you asked a key question, who here has smacked their kids? And pretty much everyone had to put up their hand. Although I noticed we didn't see if you put up your hand, Ali. Have you smacked your kids?
No, I haven't.
Oh, and you're a better parent than me, Ali. Jeez.
Yeah, but I'll be honest. Like, it's not something I'd ever sort of really thought about.
You don't, though.
And we were smacked as kids, and Mum will get angry. She's going to say, "It sounds like I belted you." No, but I mean, we did get smacked. It wasn't very often, but then we always had the threat of it.
Yeah.
And that always worked. And but for me, like, I'm just bracing it on my kids now. My four-year-old can be quite emotional at times. But, I mean, they do, two and four, they do wail into each other these days. And so here I am pulling them apart. Do not hit your sister.
Yeah.
Do not smack your brother. For me personally, it doesn't then sit comfortably that I turn around and I smack when I'm telling them not to.
Yeah.
But I do understand, because I was growing up in a household where it happened. And I think people have very emotive responses to this, because I think there are different ways that people smack too. And I think, you know, some of the emotions and responses in the room were perhaps in regards to how they were raised and how discipline was handed up in their families. So I think there's a lot of personal experience that comes into that, which is why I thought it was really important when it was getting very heated in the room, and it was getting a bit uncomfortable, but that's also really important that we deal with the issues, and sometimes these issues are uncomfortable, to just kind of put it in perspective. And as you say, it was surprising when I asked that question, how many people in this room smacked, how many people put their hand up? it just kind of it took that real heat and pressure off the situation.
Yeah, it's easy to say you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. I'm offended by what you're doing, and then hang on, have you done it? Oh yeah, I have. You know, and the fact is, what this series shows is that everyone is fallible. And on the smacking issue, it's usually a sign that you've lost control of the situation, or you're tired, or you know, it's not a tool that should be in your toolbox, but it is something that has come out, I think, occasionally with people. And look, I think this is a fascinating series, Ali. I cannot wait to see the remainder of the series. I'm learning so much, but it's also engaging. It's not preaching, it's engaging.
No.
And there are a lot of lessons to learn for everyone, I think.
And I think everyone in the room came into it. Like, everyone loved their kids. More than life itself, and they've come in trying to do the very best they can, and everyone is open to seeing what other people are doing and if they can improve. And I think a lot of, you know, by the end of the experiment, a lot of our parents, no one is going, nope, I've got it absolutely right, everyone else is wrong, and my way is the only way. Everyone was really receptive to how others do things. And, you know, and we talk about the heavy issues right now. There are so many laughs and funny moments and connections between these parents and these families that you see throughout the whole season. It's really lovely. So it's kind of, you know, I don't know if you've seen the shorts, I'm crying at different times, laughing at others. So, you know, it's got everything. It's got everything. All things that we do every day as parents. We laugh and we cry, don't we?
Yeah, I agree. It's got that emotional range. The show is Parental Guidance. It premieres on Monday at 7:30 p.m. on 9 and 9 Now. Ali Langdon, you know I love you. You're a legend. Thanks for being on TV Black Box.
Love you too. See you, Rob.
So Rob, Parental Guidance is obviously starting next week, and it's going to be up against Big Brother. I usually love, you know, guessing ratings and stuff, but this one's a bit hard for me. What do you reckon?
I actually think it's going to be a pretty even split. I don't think Big Brother or Parental Guidance will go gangbusters. Obviously, we all know I'm a Big Brother fanatic, so I will be watching Big Brother. But I've got to say, Parental Guidance I've seen the first episode now, and it's a great show. So I think it'll be an even split, but Parental Guidance will appeal to parents, and it's confronting but good television. I really liked it, and it's something very different. But now it's time to open the TV binge box and find out what everyone's been watching. Sarah, what's been on your list this week?
It was only one.
NCIS.
No.
Surprisingly enough, I've
ditched everything for Shameless. Oh. We are just powering through Shameless, and it is, I mean, it's old. It's really, really old. And it's funny because, like, they have references in it to, like, you know, something like Obama did or something political, and you're like, oh, I remember that happening. And it's just, and, you know, the old flip phones, and then you can see it as it progresses through time, like when they got an iPhone. But we legit spent the entire weekend from, like, wake up to go to bed late watching Shameless, just binging the whole thing.
Fabulous. All right, Robbo, what's been on your list?
We've got to wrap this up soon because I'm up to episode 7 of Squid Game and I cannot get enough. I always come in a little bit late.
You're a month late.
Now, you know why? Because...
It's better than early.
Yes, better than arriving early. But I like to... I like to see things with a fresh eye, and I'm very excited about it. So I'm still watching that 30 Rock.
Can I say, Robert, you know my 11-year-old daughter, on Roblox, there is Squid Game. She's playing Squid Game on Roblox.
Now, sorry, is that the one that I like?
Yes, I think so.
I mean, the game, I meant the game. Fortnite. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. Hey, Aaron, what are you watching, friend? Quick.
The Blacklist is back. 9 years, can you believe that show has been going for? Wow. The other one, 7 News Spotlight, it aired on the weekend but didn't air in the Northern Territory because of legal reasons and can't put it on 7 Plus because of that, which means I can't watch it. So if anyone can email me and tell me some sort of way I can watch the show or someone at 7 send me a copy. And the other one, obviously I've been watching Love Island. Now, so I know that you guys probably don't watch it, but the idea of the show is that you couple up with someone, find a spark, etc., and if you're left as the vulnerable position that you're not with anyone, you basically get dumped from the island. Well, I mean, we all know that the relationships are not going to be, you know, that authentic, but there were two couples that seemed to be working, you know, fairly well and connecting and strong. There was one girl that was left on Monday night, and ordinarily she would be dumped, but there was a twist, and she stayed, and one of the two strong couples were actually kicked off the show, you know, and of course they were devastated because they actually did have a strong couple. That wasn't supposed to be the whole point of the show, so very disappointed. It was cruel, and I did see a lot of comments online about that. It was pretty cruel, so hopefully they don't do that kind of thing moving forward. That sounded so serious for such a shit show, but but I'm still watching it, and so is 600 other thousand Australians.
Good
so
man.
You can't do that, Love Island.
Love it. I've been watching the Goldbergs. I know why you dropped off, Robbo, but I'm still enjoying it enough to... I do like it.
So you've got to power through. Is it a power through series? That's what we call them.
I'm binging it for sure. But
sure.
Look, you just got to accept the fact it starts off with jokes at the beginning, but it always ends on a really nice, wholesome part.
What
way
did we learn
today? The
wrap-up
at the end is always unbelievable.
So it's a TV show you have on while you're cooking dinner. It's in the background. Is it that kind of show?
Weirdly, I tend to actually watch it in one go. Mark could be very impressed with me. I watch an episode in
Not
one
in
go.
Five
but I usually am going through emails and stuff at the time, but that's how I watch TV. My wife and I are watching Lucifer again. So we're back on Lucifer.
Watch this.
And we're on the series where God has turned up, so we're enjoying that. Now that I've got my we bought a new Foxtel remote for the Foxtel Now box so we can watch Foxtel again, I'm able to... What's that reaction, Robbo?
And in any way, guys, before we get to Canasta or before we get to playing Baccarat, I'd like to say that the wife and I, the missus and I, got a new remote control, everyone. That's put that in the minutes, would you, Gerald? Because I got a remote control. But yes.
No, we lost it. I talked about this last week, how we lost the Foxtel Now remote.
And I believe that remote. We lost a couple of listeners to old age when we went through that story as well then. So I'm glad we've got a follow-up.
Right.
The
so
sequel that no one asked for.
You're saying I'm boring. Okay.
No, I didn't say that. That was my character, Gerald.
So I watched Last Week Tonight and also catching up on Real Housewives of Melbourne.
Oh,
that's good television. I've never watched the series before.
Me neither.
Obviously, Mulk is doing a podcast on that. I wonder if that's what he's doing tonight. Anyway, looking forward to Doctor Who, which will be here on the 1st of November. Might have to take the day off work. All right, that brings us to the end of the TV Black Box. Abby Mickelson produced and wrote and edited this podcast. David Robinson joined me, Aaron Ryan joined me, Sarah Monahan joined me, and I'm Rob McKnight. It's good night from McKnight.
Naughty Love Island.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.